Okay, Parshas Bamidbar, as we begin the fourth of the five books. Let's study today the topic of the Levim, the Levites.
What page?
Page 726 we will begin, as the beginning of the Parsha. Now there are a couple of different sections that I'd like to study with you. In this particular Parsha, the Levim have an interesting role. They come up in a number of different areas. One of the major topics of this Parsha is the census, which is taken, another count of the Jewish people. They're counted at least three different times throughout the Chumash. One of them takes place in this Parsha. The Levites are counted in a different manner than the rest of the Jewish people. They are given specific tasks. They are designated for their special status in the Jewish people throughout this Parsha. So I'd like to learn, as we follow that through, where we see the development. This is the Parsha in which they are officially consecrated. They are officially designated for that task. And we'll study it through and conclude with two, in my mind at least, magnificent ideas as to what is derived through that part of the story. But let us begin from the beginning. So on page 726, the beginning of the Parsha, we have the Jewish people beginning with a count, a census that is taken. Now the Ramban points out that as far as our topic goes of the Levim, Moshe Rabbeinu had a hint to what was to come right away in the very beginning of this Parsha. If you look as we begin in verse 2, Pasuk Beis, the Torah describes, Se'u'es Rosh Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael L'mishpachosam. The command is given from Hashem to Moshe, take a census of the entire assembly of the people. And what's interesting is the way that this is done according to the families, which is pretty standard. And as you continue reading those two or three verses, verse 3, from 20 years of age and up, where is the count going to be? From how old do you have to be to qualify to be counted? From age 20. Anyone who goes out to the Legion of Israel shall be counted. And then verse 4, and with you shall be one man from each tribe, a man who is a leader of his father's household. So that the count is done with a representative from each tribe, a leader of the tribe standing at the head. And with that leader, he will represent that tribe as their counted. So there's an interesting facet of the count that's done, that there's an official leader appointed in charge, so to speak, or the head of each tribe. Now, we'll go through the tribes and you'll see what's missing right away. Whenever you have, the number 12 is always, when we talk about the tribes of the Jewish people, they're always 12. But there are two different ways of counting 12. Either we count Yosef as one tribe, and then we have the tribe of Levi is counted. But if we don't count the tribe of Levi, then what we do is we count Yosef as two, and we divide it up into his two sons of Ephraim and Manasseh. So they're always 12. The only issue is, how did we get to the 12? Did we include Levi in the count, at which point we would only include one tribe for Yosef? Or do we include, we take out Levi and we include the two? So as you go through, right in the very beginning, so Moshe is given this first command right away. He's going to count up the Jewish people. And right away, as you'll note, so you see the listing is given beginning in Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Ela Shmos Ha'anashim. These are the names. We have Reuven for the tribe of Reuven, Elitzor ben Shteor. For the tribe of Shimon, we have Shlumiah ben Tzurishaddai. Who's the third of the tribes?
Judah.
Who's in order, in chronological order? Who's the third? Reuven, Shimon. Oh, this should be obvious because it's the topic of our conversation. Levi, correct. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Levi was the third. Right, Levi was the third that was born, and then we have Yehuda. So right away, so you know, you have Reuven, Shimon. We skip over Levi, and we go to Yehuda. Then in verses 8 and 9, Yisachar and Zvulun. And then we have Livnei Yosef. We have, in verse 10, Ephraim. And Limanasha, another one. So you see clearly who's left out of this count? It's Levi.
Why?
Oh, I just got started. I've only been talking for 3 minutes. Give me a chance. Good. I want to point out, as we go through, we're going to see this concept is going to come up all the time. Numerous references to this idea. And let's learn the psukim first, learn the verses, and then try to have an understanding answering your question of why. But right away, so before even anything is mentioned, Moshe, perceptive as he is, will note that Levi is left out of his count. The count includes two tribes of Yosef, Ephraim, and Manasseh, and Levi is omitted because he doesn't have a leader appointed to stand guard while he counts the tribe. Levi doesn't have a representative. Okay, so the Torah then goes on for the next number of pages. You will see 728, 729. You have on the headings on your left-hand side. All the counts are taken of each one of the various tribes. Reuben, Shimon, Gad, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Ephraim, all of them are listed. We come to the total in verse 44 on page 730 and 731. And then we get to our verses, which will make our first stop of the afternoon, verse 47. Following the conclusion, if you look at verse 46, we have the total, the grand total given. Ela kol hapakudim, these are the all the counting, 603,550. So 603,000, those are the grand total of numbers of everybody else. And then as verse 47 says, and the Leviim, they were not counted. So we should have noted that already, of course, in the fact that they didn't have a tribal leader appointed. All the tribes are counted, listed. Levi's not listed amongst them. We could have figured it out there as well. And then the Torah actually states, in a pasuk unto itself, pasuk Mem Zayin, verse 47, the Leviim were not counted amongst the Jewish people. Next, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemer, says the Chumash, Hashem spoke to Moshe. Aches matei Levi loy sifkod, v'yasrosham lo sisot, v'soich b'nei Yisrael. Do not count the tribe of Levi, and you shall not take a census of them among the children of Israel. Don't count them amongst the people. Clearly they're going to be counted. We're going to have accounts several psukim from now. The Levium will be counted. But the command is given clearly that they shall not be counted amongst the Jewish people. Now we're going to find that there are three areas where the Levium are going to be distinguished from the rest of the Jewish people in these coming up psukim, where Hashem is now speaking to Moshe and defining and carving out a niche in the Jewish people that the Levium, the Levites, will hold. Number one, what's stated clearly, they're not going to be counted amongst everybody else. The Jewish people are counted as a whole, and they are left out. Number two, V'atah, continues the Chumash, verse 50, Pasuk Nun, Hafkedes hal v'yim al mishkan ha'edus v'al kol kelov, v'al kol asher lo, appoint them over the tabernacle. So in other words, we have the mishkan, which is now traveling in the midbar in the desert with the Jewish people, which will later be replaced, of course, by the permanent base HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. But for now, the Torah is describing the Mishkan, which is currently there. They will be appointed over the Mishkan, over all of its utensils, and over everything that belongs to it. They are now appointed in charge, basically, of the Mishkan. The tabernacle, taking care of it, its charge, its care, is under that of the Levium. The Hem Yishar Suhu, the Saviv LeMishkan Yachanu, they will minister to it. They are now in charge of the Mishkan. That's area number two we have in which they're distinct. Number one is they're counted separately. Not only are they going to be counted separately in that they're physically counted in a separate counting, the way in which they're counted we're going to see are going to be different. Not between the ages of 20 to 60. They're counted from the age of 1 month old and up. They are already counted, so they're counted in a separate count, in a different method of counting. They are given a task. They are going to be in charge of the tabernacle, of the Mishkan, all of the utensils, all of the vessels is all going to be under their charge. And the last phrase in verse 50, V'saviv la-Mishkan yachanu, and surrounding the Mishkan will be their encampments. Following this pasuk, this little section of the Torah, you'll see if you flip the page, the beginning of chapter 2, on page 733, are the four formations. You have the encampments in which the Jewish people were encamped, three tribes each on the four sides of the Mishkan. The Mishkan was in the middle, so to the north, south, east, and west were four encampments, each of which contained three tribes. And the tribe of Levi, we are told, shall be in the middle. So they're given a third task, aside from being counted separately, aside from being in charge of the Mishkan and all of its vessels, they are now charged with encamping around the Mishkan.
Rabbi.
Yes?
What about the Kohanim in this census?
Okay, good. So the Kohanim are we'll get to the where the Kohanim fit in this. In other words, we will get to that. It's a good question. Right now, we're describing specifically the tribe of Levi, which will include both the Kohanim and the Levium. Now, they both, Aharon was from the tribe of Levi, and his descendants became Kohanim, and Moshe and his descendants and some of Aaron's sons also became regular Levium. But that whole tribe will be encamped around the Mishkan, both the Kohanim and the Levim. Pasuk Nun Aleph, Uvinsoya HaMishkan, when the tabernacle will journey, Yoridu Otho Halvim, Uvachanos HaMishkan Yakim Otho Halvim, when the tabernacle will travel, who will be in charge of dismantling it and erecting it when it achieves its next resting point? The Levim. And then the Torah adds, V'hazar HaKarev Yumas. And anyone outside of the tribe of Levi who involves himself in dealing with that, taking down the Mishkan, putting it back up, is punishable by death. So it's not a light appointment that we have here for the Levim. What just happened is we just appointed the Levim, so you say, oh, they were given a special count. Very nice. They were given a task to take care of the Mishkan. Very nice. They'll surround the Mishkan when it encamps. Their dwelling will be there. They are appointed to an extent that if anyone else were to come and do their task, that's punishable by death. This is designated only for the Levim. This is their issue, their task, and no one else is permitted to be involved. Anyone else who tries attempting that is punishable by death. It's a heavenly death penalty, not one that is carried out by a Beis Din, but by a heavenly divine punishment.
Is this a reward for the Levim?
Oh, so what I want to set up is, where is this coming from? And at this point in the Chumash, at this point, the Torah hasn't told us. We're going to get to that later in the parasha. So there are a couple of steps in which we see the development. Not that it's a development as things are going, but the way the Torah is informing us it's a development as to what's going on. What we have here is quite an appointment. We have a separate count. They don't have a leader appointed like everybody else. They're going to be counted separately. They're going to be encamped around the tabernacle. Then themselves, they're the ones who dismantle and erect the Mishkan. No one else is allowed to go near it. And right now, we have not been given a reason as to why that should be. That we have not, we just simply haven't been told that. Let's just read a little bit more, and then we'll go to the third section, which we will be studying. 52. The Torah then describes that the children of Israel will encamp every man in his camp and his banner. So this again describes, which is a shmooze unto itself, the concept that each tribe had its own banner, each tribe had its own flag, their own encampments. In each one of the four directions were three tribes, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, and the Jewish people each have their own identifying flag. And again, the Torah then describes in Nun Gimel in 53, the Levites will encamp around the tabernacle. And again, a interesting phrase. The Levites shall encamp around the Mishkan, and therefore what? So that there shall be no wrath upon the assembly of the children of Israel. Why should they be there? Because if they won't be there, then there'll be some form of a pouring out of anger or wrath, some punishment, so that the 732. So that the Levim shall encamp around, and because of that, there will not be the wrath of Hashem against the Jewish people. Rashi comments, the implication being, which you just mentioned, Im Ta'asu, it's on the top of the second column, if you want to follow it and sign, Im Ta'asu kimitzvosai lo yek, if you will listen to my commandments and follow my instructions, there will not be any plague, there will not be any wrath. But if you do not listen and allow foreigners, the word zar, we want to discuss the word zar, a foreign person, in this case a regular Jew, not a Levi, who enters into this task of taking care of the tabernacle, then there will be a ketzef, there will be a wrath unleashed against the Jewish people. This is specific and limited to the Levim. Shamru, the pasuk concludes in verse 53, Vishamru ha-Levim es mishmeres mishkan ha-edus, the Levites shall safeguard the watch of the tabernacle of the testimony, and the sages are now from here, they literally would stand watch. We literally would have posts in which the Levim would be set up, both in the Beis HaMikdash and the tabernacle. They would stand guard. It was both, not necessarily to protect it from Jewish people trying to infiltrate, but to make sure no one else came by who wasn't allowed to be there. It was an honor like an honor guard of the king, that he should have people on guard always watching the palace gates, and the Levium were hereby appointed to this task. So far at this point, again, just setting up the situation as what we have. Clearly, the Levim have been appointed for something special. Anyone who's not a Levite, who engages in these activities, punishable by death, will bring about the wrath of Hashem against the entirety of the Jewish people. They're counted separately. They encamp around the Mishkan, and they're in charge of everything that will go on, the utensils, taking it apart, putting it back up. It's all their task. Okay, so far so good. Let's learn a little bit more Chumash, then we'll learn some Rashis. Let's do a little bit more Chumash. Okay, chapter 2. We're not going to be going, we'll just skip through. You see it just from the headings on the side of your art scroll. I think I mentioned to you before, but I always like mentioning your Beryl Wine. It says that in the future generations of the Jewish people, they're going to be convinced that the Torah was given on Har Sinai with an introduction and a prologue and little headings on the sides of the chapters, because those of us who grew up with art scroll, like that's the way that you're supposed to study, right? But in any case, they're here, so I'll make use of them. So you have the sections of Perek Beis, you have the four formations, and the Torah goes through, again, counting out the different tribes, who dwelled with whom, in which area, the north and the south, and the east and the west, who was in camps with who. You'll see in the top of page 737, in verse 32, again we have a total given. These are the countings of the children of Israel according to the father's households. Again, the number 600,350 is counted again as we go through where they're counted. So they're counted and listed to us individually by tribe, then where they're encamped, and then again in verse 33, as if we had already forgotten from the previous chapter, the Levites were not counted among the children of Israel as Hashem had commanded Moshe. Once again, the repetition, just in case you weren't paying attention, in case you didn't notice that when we went through all the tribes that they were encamped to the east, to the west, to the north, and to the south, that they're not mentioned anywhere, in case you missed it there, in case you missed it earlier, a second time it's explicitly mentioned, the Levium are not counted amongst the Jewish people, separate and distinct. Okay, have I belabored that point yet? Clear, right? Everyone's got that. Okay, just making sure. Just making sure. I bet I have a real good answer, right? Once you set up a question. Okay, let's move forward. Perek Gimel. Here we are actually now going to get, after they've clearly been set up and distinguished, the reason. Now we're going to get to that question of why. The Eila, let's start. Pasuk Aleph, again on page 736, 737. Eila, Toldos, Aharon, Umoshe. So the Torah begins, these are the offspring, this is the progeny of Aharon and Moshe. The Yom Divar Hashem es Moshe b'Har Sinai, on the day Hashem spoke to Moshe and on Har Sinai. So based on that first pasuk, what should we expect should be the follow-up series of psukim with a header like that? These are the children, the offspring of Moshe and Aaron. What should we expect?
The names.
The names of who?
Children of Moshe and Aaron.
Children of Moshe and Aaron, good. Now what you find, of course, and hopefully some of you have come across this before, the Torah doesn't do that. Even though the header was the children of Moshe and Aharon, Torah says in pasuk Beis, Ve'ela Shemos B'nei Aharon. And these are the children of Aharon, Habachor, Nadav. Then we have Avihu, Elazar, and Isamar, the four sons of Aharon. Torah describes in verse 4 that Nadav and Avihu had died when they offered up that, here's that word again, Eish Zarah. That's when we had described it. When Nadav and Avihu, when they brought that foreign fire, the Eish Zarah, they were both killed, leaving Elazar and Isamar, the sons of Aharon. And then the Torah goes on to describe the appointments of the Levites. And if you'll flip forward, you will not find anywhere the sons of Moshe listed here. So the header was, these are the sons of Aharon and Moshe. We only list the sons of Aharon without listing the sons of Moshe. And even though this is not directly germane to the topic, this is a classic Rashi which is oft quoted, and is worth taking a little detour to quote this Rashi. The very top Rashi on our page, if you want to follow it inside, Eila Todos Aharon and Moshe, says Rashi, Ve'eino Maskir Elu B'nei Aharon. But the Torah only lists the sons of Aharon. So how could you give me a header that you're going to tell me who the sons of Moshe and of Aharon are, and you only told me who the sons of Aharon are? Says Rashi, V'nikru utoldos Moshe. But these sons of Aharon are clearly also then considered sons of Moshe. Because the Torah says, these are the sons of Moshe and Aharon, and it only lists Aharon's sons. So what's the Torah coming to teach you? They must really be considered, these sons, both the sons of Aharon and the sons of Moshe. Even though Moshe didn't physically, biologically father them, they are considered his sons. Why? Lefi shalamdan Torah. Because Moshe taught them Torah. Melamed shekol ha-melamed es ben chavero Torah. Anyone who teaches the son of his friend Torah. Ma'ale olav ha-kosov ki'ilu yoldu. The Torah considers it as if he gave birth to him himself. Anyone who you teach Torah to, you are considered as if you have fathered that child. So that the sages are telling us, what the Torah is teaching us here, is that there are several components to a child. There is the child's biological existence. Who is the child's biological mother? Who is the child's biological father? Who gave the genetic code for this child and brought the child into existence? And then you have the spiritual component to a child. Who is nurturing the child in a spiritual mean? Who is guiding the child, teaching the child, giving the child all that it needs to achieve its state and place in the world to come? That's another element, and that if the parents do that themselves, how wonderful it is that the parents were privileged to provide all of that for their children. But if not, so then the one who is privileged to teach that child Torah is considered as if it's their child. I have fathered this child in the spiritual sense, because I have provided you, the actual parents, provided physical needs, brought the child into existence with the partnership, of course, with Hashem, raised the child physically, but that spiritual component, which is another real bona fide component, was fulfilled by someone else, and the Torah considers that person also as a parent of that child. And therefore the Torah says, these are the sons of Moshe and Aharon, and it lists Aharon's sons, because Moshe is also considered their father. Alright, parenthetical, just wanted to mention that one of those Rashis, which is often quoted. Yeah.
What happened to Gershon? I mean, he should have been mentioned, shouldn't he?
Moshe's son?
Uh-huh.
Well, that, what do you mean he should have been mentioned? Where?
Well, I can understand that we have our own sons because Moshe taught them.
Right.
But I don't understand why his own sons are omitted.
Right, well, because the point here is only to count Aaron's sons. We're not interested in Moshe's sons right now, because we're about to only... The Torah only wants to list Aaron's sons. The oddity is that Moshe is listed as their father. Because we never were interested in Moshe's sons right now. That wasn't why we wanted to... We just want to know who Aaron's sons are, because we're about to list the appointment of the Levium and go through the tasks of the Kohanim. The point is Aaron's sons, and the fact is that we called Moshe their father is to teach us this lesson. But both Moshe's, neither Moshe's sons are listed here. Neither Moshe's sons. It's a separate discussion, the general question of what happened to Moshe's sons. They're not, once, after their birth, they're not really mentioned in the Torah anymore. They don't have a role, which you could take from it whatever you want. There are many who would...
When this word was mentioned before, toldo, so then there's the idea, it not only meant the specific children, but it could mean like the outcomes,
from Noah, Parshas Noah. Ela told us b'nei Noah, right.
So one could almost say that here, because we're going to follow now the house of Aaron and his sons. You see what I'm saying? No.
Sorry.
That the outcomes here, the offspring, are going to come down that line. Of Moshe.
Could be.
It wasn't Gershon. It's Gershon. His children.
I love that in Gershon.
The M at the end from Gershon is the Levite.
Okay. Alright, moving on. Good. So now we're up to verse 5. So now we're actually going to get to the appointment. So we have the Levium clearly distinguished. Why? Vayidabur Hashem al Moshe le'emor. Hashem speaks to Moshe, saying as follows, verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Hakreves matei Levi, bring forward, bring near the tribe of Levi, v'ho amadato oto lefnei Aharon ha-Kohen, and have them stand before Aharon the Kohen, v'sher su oso, so that they shall serve him. Says Hashem to Moshe, bring forth this tribe, put them before Aaron. Aaron's going to be their boss. They are going to serve Aaron. Aaron is in charge of the Beis HaMikdash, in charge of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and all that goes on inside. He's the priest. Now he's been given his helper, so to speak. He's been given the tribe of Levi, and their task is, Visher Su O So. You serve him. Says Rashi, Umahu Hashirus, I'm in the three lines from the bottom of the first column, if you want to follow inside. Umahu Hashirus, in what way do the Levim serve Aharon? Vishamru es Mishmarto, which is the very beginning of the next phrase. What does the Pasuk say in verse 7? Pasuk Zayin, Vishamru es Mishmarto, they shall safeguard his charge. Says Rashi, what does that mean, or what's going on here? Back in Rashi, Vifisha Shmiras HaMikdash Alav, really the guarding of the Mikdash is in Aaron's responsibility. He needs to make sure Shalo Yikrov Zar, that no one comes forward who's not allowed to do so. As it says, Valavim Halalu Misayin Osam. The Levim were now put in charge of helping out. You are now given the task of making sure that only Kohanim and Levim come forward and you keep everybody else out. That's step one of your task as Levim, are to literally, physically safeguard the tabernacle from being infiltrated by someone who's not allowed to be here. Let's go to verse 8. Vishamru es kol kalei oihel moed. What else do they do? They will guard, safeguard all the utensils of the tent of meeting. Yes, Mishmeres B'nei Yisrael. And the charge of the children of the Jewish people, La'avodas Avodas HaMishkan, to perform the service of the tabernacle. They are guarding all of the utensils. And in charge of that which goes on. Now, that middle phrase, as Mishmeres B'nei Yisrael, the charge of the children of Israel, what's that a reference to? So Rashi here quotes, why are they... Let me just sum again. Verse 8 reads as follows. They shall safeguard all the utensils of the tent of meeting. So what does that mean in English? They're in charge of all the vessels. All of the things that are used in the Mishkan, the Levim are in charge. What else does verse 8 say they need to do? They safeguard the utensils and the charge of the children of Israel. What does that mean that they're in charge of the task or the charge of the children of Israel? So Rashi says, and this is going to be the beginning of where we're headed, Shekula, in the last Rashi in the second column, Shekulam hayu zekukin letzorchei hamikdash. All of the Jewish people were required to be responsible for the needs of the mikdash. Really, the Jewish people are in charge of the Beis HaMikdash. It's our responsibility to make sure that everything is taken care of. But the Levim are being now placed in their stead, in place of them. So that it's the charge of the Jewish people, our charge, to make sure that the tabernacle and the Beis HaMikdash is kept up, is guarded and taken care of. And the Levim are now coming in our place, doing our job. L'sikach loikhim mehem ha-maisros bischaran. And that's why Rashi says they get Meiser as their reward. Remember, we once discussed Meiser. Meiser is one-tenth of the crops, which is the derivation of where we have the idea of giving off our Meiser of our income today. But in an agricultural society, a Jew would harvest his crop, he would give off Truma to a Kohen, he would take off a 60th of his crop and give it to a Kohen, and then he would take off a 10th of his crop and give it to the Levim. Why are the Levim entitled to a tenth of my hard-earned labor? I worked in the fields all summer long, harvesting, and now I got my crops, my silos are filled, and I have to take a tenth of it and give it to the Levi. Says Rashi here, that comes from this phrase, that they are safeguarding your charge. You, the Jewish people, you really need to be taking care of the Beis HaMikdash. You need to be taking care of Hashem's house. We'll see in a minute why we're not. Whatever that reason why we're not, the Levim were put in our place. They need to do it, and as a schar, as a reward for their doing our job, taking care of that Beis HaMikdash, we give them a tenth of our crops. Let's go a little bit further, and then we'll sum up everything that we have over here. Okay, just continuing verse 9, just to get the rest of it. You shall present the Levites to Aharon and his sons. They are presented to him from the children of the Jewish people. They are presented again, as we mentioned, Rashi points out over here, to help out. That's their task. You shall appoint Aharon and his sons, and they shall safeguard their priesthood. Anyone who approaches, who is not of that Kohen or Levite tribe, will be killed. Okay, now, so what we've got here is a further step in what their task is. They're now appointed to help out the Kohen. We still have not been given the reason why. So we've been given the separate count. We've been given their encampment. We've been given their erecting and dismantling of the Mishkan. We've been given they're in charge of helping Aaron, his personal helpers, as far as safeguarding it, making sure that everything is in order, taking care of the utensils. They're given the reward of Meiser for their task. What we have not yet been told is why. That we finally now get to in Psukim Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, and Yud Gimel. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lema, verse 11. Says Hashem, Va'ani, Hinei lokachti es ha-Levim mitoich b'nei Yisrael. I have taken the Levim from the midst of the Jewish people, tachas kol b'chor peterechem, mibnei Yisrael, in place of the firstborn of all the Jewish people, v'hoyu li ha-Levim. And therefore the Levim shall be for me. I have taken them for me. Rashi is bothered. What does that mean, I have taken them for me? Everyone is yours. Everything is yours. In what way have you taken the Levim more than anybody else? Says Rashi, Pasuk Yud Beis. Va'ani hinei lakachti, va'ani meheichon zachisi, and when did I merit that the Levim should be special and unique to me more than anybody else? Mitoich b'nei Yisrael, from the midst, from amongst the Jewish people. Shiyu Yisrael soichron oisam l'shirus shali, that the Jewish people, so to speak, hire them for my task. And as we mentioned, we're going to hire the Levim to do our task. What? Why is it our task? Or meaning the Hashem's task. Ayidei habchoros zochisi bohem v'lokachtin tmurasam. Through the firstborns, I merited the Levim, and I took the Levim in the place of the firstborns. Meaning what? Says Rashi, Lefi shehaisa ha'avoda b'vechoros. Originally, do you know who did the service in the Beis HaMikdash, or who was designated to do the service? It was the Bechor. It was the firstborn. They were the ones who were supposed to go into the Beis HaMikdash and do it. So that the initial setup was that there wasn't a tribe designated. It was every family had a representative who would be able to go into the Beis HaMikdash and offer up the sacrifices on behalf of the family, who would spend time, who would be privileged to do all of those tasks in the Beis HaMikdash, was initially set to be for each one of the firstborn of that particular family. U'kishechotu be'egel nifsulu. But when the sin of the golden calf occurred, and the Jewish people got involved in that, they lost that privilege. The firstborn lost that privilege of being able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. V'halevim shelo avdu avodah zarah nivcharu tachteim. And the Levim who were not Ovid avodah zarah, the Levim who were not engaged in that practice of the golden calf, were therefore placed instead of the firstborns and given this task. So it's at this point that the Torah then goes back and explains they have a different setup. They're counted differently. They're encamped differently. They have a task of being in charge of the Beit HaMikdash. And all of that is, Hinei lakachti es ha-Levim. I have taken the Levim. When and why did I take the Levim? Because I took them in place of the firstborns. Where do we see the privilege of the firstborn? So if you look at one more verse, we've done a lot of learning inside today, more than usual. Yud Gimel, Ki li kol b'chor. Because initially every firstborn was mine. And why was every firstborn mine? It's like a two-step process. B'yom hakosli kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim. Because when I smote all of the firstborns in Mitzrayim, in the tenth of the ten plagues, hiskadashti li kol b'chor b'Yisrael, all firstborns became sanctified to me. Both man, animal, every firstborn is mine. Therefore the firstborn was elevated to a status of sanctity. They lost that status to be able to serve in the tabernacle, and therefore I have taken the Levim in their stead. What did the Levim do to earn that right to take the place of the Bechor, of the firstborn? Because they did not get involved in the sin of the golden calf. So that the firstborn is sanctified because of what took place in Mitzrayim. Now, parenthetically, the firstborn, because of that sanctity, he didn't lose the sanctity. He still requires to be redeemed. The firstborn son, as it's called, as you're familiar, I'm sure, the Pidyon HaBen. When there's a firstborn son who's not from a Levi or from a Kohen, so he needs to be redeemed because he still has that level of sanctity. He cannot serve in the Mikdash, but he does need to be redeemed because he's still sanctified. So he is redeemed, but that ability to still work and serve in the tabernacle in the Beis HaMikdash is lost. They lost it during the Chet HaEgel. Who took that place? The Levim eventually took that place. There's a fascinating dispute amongst the commentators, parenthetically, as to what will happen when Mashiach comes, whether or not firstborns will regain that ability, or it will remain only for the Levim. What will take place is a topic of dispute, what will be in the future. Will it remain as it is now, where it's only Levim? Will we add the firstborns back to the equation, but the Levim will remain? Or will it be just the firstborn, and the Levim will lose that status again? But not for today's discussion, but there's such a discussion as to what will take place. As it was clear initially, it seems to have been the Bechor, the firstborn, was supposed to have done it, and the Levim were taken in their place because they were not involved in the Chet HaEgel. Okay, that sums up. There's more, because there's a lot to discuss when it comes to the census of the Levim, how it's done differently, and they need to be redeemed. The firstborns are redeemed. The numbers didn't exactly match up, how many firstborns there were versus the Levim. There's a whole process which is described, how the extra firstborns were redeemed, because they lost that status of sanctity. But so there's more to discuss. The Levim have a major role, but so far we have pretty much a complete picture as to what's going on. So there are two thoughts that I want to share with you on this idea of the Levim being elevated. The first is that Rashi that we just read. Why were the Levim chosen? Why were they chosen to replace the firstborn? Oh, beautiful insight. I saw this last night. It just blew me away, this insight. So if I ask you what they did, the answer is really nothing. Right? They did not participate in the sin of the golden calf.
Weren't they the ones who then slew
them? Correct. That's not Rashi quotes. That's why the Kohanim were chosen from the Levim to actually serve. But the Levim were not. That was Mila Shemila as far as the priests go. But the Levim were not chosen. Rashi quotes, they were chosen because they did not choose to participate in the sin of the golden calf. And so I saw in the Sefer Lekach Tov, see, he points this out, all of this effort that the Torah puts forth into distinguishing the Levim. And again, several different times, they're counted separately, they have a special task. They are given the task for dismantling and assembling the tabernacle, which is a type of task that if anyone else were to do, is punishable by death. And what did they do to merit it? They kept their belief, faith, their system straight when everyone around them crumbled. It was not an act of actively doing something, going against the grain to do something out of the ordinary. It was maintaining that which you were doing when those around you are falling. It was a holding true, a holding steadfast to a system of belief, of understanding, a nature of the world around you, of Torah mitzvahs. When everyone around me is not doing it, simply being strong enough to maintain is what earned it, which is an important thing, because sometimes you say, like for the Kohanim, what made a Kohen got up and said, I will avenge the death of I went out and they went out and killed people who were involved in the Chet HaEgel. And Pinchas, when he goes out, and what we'll learn about later in the Sefer, where, takes action and actively does something above and beyond the call of duty. The Levim, when the world around them was crumbling, when the Jewish people are dancing around the golden calf, singing Elo Kacha Yisrael, and they said, I won't get involved in that. That was what merited that they should be the ones to take the place of the Bechor. That should be what gave them that status of being distinct from all the Jewish people, to have that task of being able to maintain that strength and that faith in all that's going on, to be able to do that. And that is certainly a limud, a lesson, a idea for Jews throughout all of history, as the world around us crumbles. The Jewish world, in particular the world around us, to maintain a steadfast system of what it is correct, not getting involved in something is sometimes as important and difficult to struggle, as we all know from our experiences. And Rashi points out, not being involved in the Avodah Zarah is what gave them this merit to be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. That's one thought. There's another thought, going back to the very first time, let's flip back to page 730, if you will, quickly. Not so quickly. 730, the first time that the Torah commands that the Levim should not be counted. So they're given this distinguished task, they're counted separately. So Rashi is bothered by why should they be counted separately. Good, we've given them a separate task. Very nice. They've earned a separate task. They've replaced the firstborn. They are now going to be the ministers in the tabernacle. They're going to dismantle, assemble the Mishkan. But why should they be counted differently? So says Rashi, in that first phrase, and the phrase was in Pasuk Mem Tes, verse 49, that you shall not count the tribe of Levi. So Rashi, it's the very first Rashi here on the page, comments, Kedaihu legivon shalmelech, legion shalmelech lios nimne levado. It's appropriate, Rashi says, that the officers of the king, those who are ministering to the king, those who are guarding his home, put on watch, taking care of his palace, taking care of his utensils, it's appropriate that they should be given a separate count. And that's the first comment that Rashi makes. So why should they be counted separately? Because they are separate. They have an elevated status. They do things different than everybody else. They should be counted differently. Continues Rashi, Dover Acher, another issue why they're counted separately. Tzipa HaKadosh Baruch Hu She'asida la'amod gzeira al kol hanimnin miben esrim shano v'mala she'amusu b'midbar. Shem foresaw that coming up in this Sefer, Bamidbar, is going to be one of the most tragic episodes in Jewish history, which we are still suffering from, that known of the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies, where the 12 people, the 12 members of the Jewish people go into Eretz Yisrael to check out the land, 10 of whom come back, of course, with an evil report. The Jewish people accept the reports and cry, and because of that, there's a decree of death upon the Jewish people, wandering through the desert for 40 years. Lots of bad stuff comes out through that. Says Rashi, Hashem saw that there was going to be a gzeir, there was going to be a decree leveled against all of those who were counted from the age of 20 and up. I mean, the way that the decree was levied against the Jewish people, all of those who have been counted will not enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael. They're not going into the land of Israel. They will die here in the desert. The next generation are going to be the ones to enter in. So Rashi says, Omer al yihiyu elu b'chlal. I don't want this tribe, I don't want my children, the Levim, to be included in that count. L'fi she'hem sheli, shelo chatu be'ego. They're mine. They didn't sin in the golden calf in the very beginning of the journey outside of Egypt as they went into, right after receiving the Torah. Says Hashem, they're mine. They didn't sin in the golden calf. I don't want them counted amongst the Jewish people because I see that the decree, the gzeirah, is going to be put out against all those who were counted from the age of 20 and up amongst the Jewish people. Chaim Shmulevitz points out, it's on the one hand frightening and encouraging all at once. It would not have been hard for Hashem to say, here comes the decree. All those who participated in the sin of the Meraglim, of the spies, are going to wander and leave the Levium out because I like the Levium. They didn't participate in the sin of the golden calf, so they're not included in the decree. The way decrees are made are on the klal, the group of the Jewish people. And when you're included in the count, you're part of the Jewish people. And if you're part of the Jewish people, then you're part of the Jewish people. You live and die, breathe, eat, sleep, drink. You're part of us. You're just in. And if the Levium had been counted as part of the Jewish people, there wouldn't have been an exception to say, they're mine, they never sinned in the golden calf, I'm leaving them out, because they were included in the count of the Jewish people. They're included. They're part of it. If the decree comes out against part, it goes out against everyone. And he points out, both for good and for bad, we are a living organism. The Jewish people is one. We just are. And when we band together, we're included together, we are counted together, we become part of a unified whole. And once something happens to part of it, it happens to all of it. So Hashem has a special dispensation that my Levim, I'm actually not going to include them in this issue. They're going to be counted separately using a different method of counting in a different count because I happen to want them to be spared from this particular instance. So they're sort of outside of the klal. They're kept out. But if you're in the klal, when you say, I am part of this family, the larger Jewish community, the larger Jewish nation as a whole worldwide, we're part. We're in. For the blessings, for the not such good things, that's just the nature of the way that the Jewish people work is always as such. We just are part of a larger organism. And therefore he learns from here this idea that in order to protect, you have to literally count them separately. They have to be out. Because otherwise, when a Jew is part of the Jewish people, that's we travel together. We travel in groups, and the good and the bad and the ugly and everything in between is all, it's all one. It's a wholeness of the Jewish people. It's really a magnificent thought which he pulls out of this idea that the sages saw. That's the reason why Hashem had to count the Levim separately, because he wanted to spare them from that decree, and there really is no other way to do that other than to count them separately. But that's the Levim. I'll conclude with one thought after we just summarized. So that's the tribe of Levi. They earned the right through their ability to stay out of the Chetah Egel. Their ability to not get involved in the sin of the golden calf earned them the right to replace the firstborn. They are now given the charge of encamping directly around the Mishkan because it's their charge to keep everybody out who's not supposed to be in. They're in charge of the assembly and dismantling of the Mishkan. They're counted separately. They've earned that right. They don't want to be part of the Jewish people because of the plague which is about to come. And they are sanctified to Hashem as that purpose. The Rambam concludes in his halacha when he describes the mitzvah of Maaseh, where you give a tenth of your crop to the Levim. So he writes about this idea that the Levi has been given a special status. He is the Mishares, the servant of Hashem, so to speak. His job is to take care of Hashem's house. His job is to be a spiritual person. He's removed from the task of working the fields because his job is to be in the Beis HaMikdash with a life dedicated to the task of Hashem. So the Rambam writes, that's their task, to learn and to teach Torah to his people. And the Rambam then concludes that any Jew who decides to dedicate his life to that purpose, who says, I'm going to follow the example of the Levim, can become as sanctified as the Levim themselves. A person has a right on his own to choose to live his life in a way that will be sanctified and holy, and that Hashem shall be his portion and his heritage, his nachala, his chelek, his portion. He can choose it. It also shall be for Hashem for all time. And in the world to come, he will merit and get that section which befits him, just as the Kohanim and the Levim have merited for all time, because their forefathers made that decision, and therefore their decision then carries for all generations. Any individual Jew can say, I also want to have a portion of serving Hashem and dedicating my life to that, and can be included within. They can't be included, they can't work in the Beis HaMikdash, that you have to be a Levi, but for that portion in the world to come, to have that merit of being included as part of one of the servants of Hashem, any Jew, says the Rambam, has the ability to include himself within that count and say, I want to dedicate myself to that service. Alright, and good afternoon. Yes.